Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's time for Soundcheck here at 93.9 WNYC. We're online at WNYC.org as well. I'm John Schaefer, and a big day in New York for the jazz community today is the opening of the Frederick P. Rose Hall at Columbus Circle, the new home of jazz at Lincoln Center. And the festivities actually began at 10 o'clock this morning when Wynton Marsalis led a New Orleans-style parade starting at the fountain at Lincoln Center and moving over to the new digs at the Rose Hall. And as you can hear in the background, lots of people sort of leaving the office buildings around the parade route to come down and watch the festivities and cheer the musicians along, some young students performing with members of Wynton Marsalis' Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. A good time apparently had by many this morning at 10 a.m., including our own Alicia Zuckerman, who got that sound for us. We will be speaking in a little while with Arturo O'Farrell. He's the leader of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra at Lincoln Center, and they are opening the second of the three performance spaces tonight. There's a large hall, a medium hall, and a small club. And Arturo and his gang will be opening the Allen Room this evening, and we'll find out what that's all about in the second half of our program. In the first half of Soundcheck, though, something a little different.
King's 32nd son, born to him a 32nd time, born to him with my ears still on, born to him with two eyebrows on, and that's all I was wearing when I woke up staring at the world. My mom had been a rather crazy queen, but not at all like a sex machine. She liked to keep her body clean, clean. Thought the world to be quite obscene, but she'd retire to her chamber, and we remained quite strangers. And to see me made her awful sad.
This song is by a young singer and pianist and songwriter named Regina Spektor, and it's from an album called simply Songs. Regina was actually born in what was then the Soviet Union and moved to the Bronx when she was 9 years old. Since then, she has moved on to a career as a singer and songwriter. She has recently toured with The Strokes. And to some in our area, she's known as being part of this so-called anti-folk scene. She's going to perform some songs for us at our piano today. Regina, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks.
So let's first of all get this anti-folk thing out of the way. I've heard this term a couple of times. I don't know what it means.
I think it means a different thing to everybody, which is what I've come to realize. But in general, to me, it's just a bunch of musicians that have played or still do play at Sidewalk Cafe on the Lower East Side. And a lot at the open mic there, and they just come to each other's shows and are sort of supportive of each other. And it's acoustic music usually, but with kind of I can do whatever I want attitude, like a more punk attitude.
Oh, okay. And it has nothing to do with whether it's, you know, guitar-based or piano-based or anything like that.
No, and it's okay. And I don't think it's really anti-folk music. Like, I think it's just...
Well, you know, these terms tend not to be created by the musicians themselves, but by people who have to write about musicians.
Right.
So now, you were 9 years old when you moved to the United States?
Yes, nine
so
and a half.
Did you come from a musical family?
Yeah, I did. My mom was in Russia, a music professor in a conservatory, and now she teaches in a public school in Mount Vernon. Actually, she's listening with her kids right now in her classroom, so I want to say, hi, Parker Elementary, and I hope you guys have a really good school year, and hi, Mom.
So Mom is still teaching music here in the States?
She's teaching the kids, and my dad, he played violin way into his 20s, so he's really a musical person, and he's really the one who introduced me to, like, the Beatles and Queen and Moody Blues when we were still in Russia.
Well, now, that was going to be my next question was, you know, when you got here, were you at all familiar with Western pop music? It sounds like you might have had more of a classical upbringing.
Yeah, it was all classical music all the time, except for some Beatles and some Queen.
Okay,
yeah.
So the stuff that Dad liked was allowed in the house, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's not even that. It's just we didn't really have access in Soviet Russia. Like, my dad was very progressive in the fact that he was always, like, making tapes and passing around tapes with his friends, but it wasn't really that, you know, that available.
Right, right. So, and then when you got here and there's just this whole other world of music available to you, that's got to be a real kind of culture shock for a 9.5-year-old kid.
Oh, I was completely shocked, and I was completely, like, very prim and proper about it, and I really decided that I hated all hip-hop, and I hated all rap, and I hated, you know, everything until I was, like, older, and then I was like, oh my god, hip-hop rules the world, Nirvana, you know, and just really fell really hard into punk and rock and, like, and hip-hop, and so...
And yet you stuck with the piano, which is not an instrument often associated with either punk or hip-hop.
I know. I try to make it as punk as I can.
Well, you know, the funny thing about a lot of your songs, I mean, it's hard to sort of make a sweeping generalization like this, but a lot of them have really strong characters and narratives. I mean, is there a... Do you have that kind of Russian literature thing happening in your background?
I hope so. I really hope I do. Well, I love short stories, and I love books and literature and definitely fairy tales, and so I think a lot of it is a combination of, like, performance art and character building and little plays, you know. Kind of wish that every song could be like a little miniature play or something.
Yeah. Have you actually written short stories in addition to songs?
I've been trying to. I haven't really written that much, but I've actually been trying to lately.
Mm-hmm. So do you generally start with you know, a kind of a literal idea, you know, an idea of a person or something that you want to sing about, or can it start with a kind of a musical hook?
It's different every time, I think. Sometimes it starts with, like, a concept, and I'll think of a little character or something I'll hear on the subway or on a bus or someone I'll see sitting on a bench, and then maybe 2 years later I'll write a song about them or something like that. Like,
well, you know, I'm sort of curious as to where this first song that you're going to play for us today comes from, because it's called Carbon Monoxide, which, you know... Not too many songs written about
good carbon old carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not really sure. Like, that one, I think, just was kind of around my brain, and I wrote it.
All right. Well, you want to play it for us at our piano? We're speaking with Regina Spektor, spelled, by the way, S-P-E-K-T-O-R. Regina is making her way over to our Steinway and will perform for us a song called Carbon Monoxide live on Soundcheck.
Got my socks on right, but but I don't have a gas mask on as I walk a 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 walk you home. Yeah, I'm so cool, I'm so cool, I'm so cool. Walk a walk a walk, walk a walk a walk, walk a walk a walk a walk a walk a walk you home. Yeah, I'm so cool, I'm so cool, I'm so cool. Come on, daddy. 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 Carbon monoxide. Soon we'll go to sleep. No one will notice we're gone, 'cause we don't have a job to keep. They'll just say that we're being lazy. Sex crazed, hey. They'll just say we're living our whole life in bed, and it will be in bed, but we'll be oh so very much dead, 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 dead. Yeah, but we're still cool, we're still cool, we're still cool, dead, 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 dead. So cool, we're so cool, we're so cool. Come on, daddy. 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 Come on, daddy.
That is Regina Spektor, live in our studio on Soundcheck this afternoon. You know, a favorite word that critics use for new singer-songwriters who come along is quirky. But, man, to have a song that starts with not being able to put your socks on right and ends with, you know, dead in bed, carbon monoxide, I mean, that's quirky. That really is. And I noticed, Regina, that, I mean, you know, you've grown up here in New York City since you were 9 and a half, you have the New York accent going there.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Walk and on and carbon monoxide. I mean, you know, it's obviously you can turn that on when the
mood
suits.
Well, I mean, I think that I'm so in love with New York. Like, I'm such a patriot of New York City that it's like, even, you know, even though I'm so, like, international in a lot of my tastes, and I'm always traveling to Europe and reading, you know, in Russian and stuff like that. Like, the New York streets and the sounds of, you know, the Bronx. Like, I love the Bronx so much, and it's a huge part, I think, of everything I do.
Yeah, now, you were telling me before we went on the air today, your family were the first Russians in your neighborhood, is that right?
Yeah, we were, like, on the front page of one of the local newspapers, and I'm there, like, with buck teeth and a, you know, hand-me-down dress from Salvation Army, like, playing handball against the brick building. It was the funniest picture ever.
So do you still write in Russian ever?
I have, you know, I never really wrote songs in Russian, but I have a couple of songs now that have little bits of Russian in it, like a few sentences here or there and stuff like
more,
that.
More recent stuff.
Yeah. I'm just starting to.
Yeah. Strange. I mean, maybe it's not strange, but I guess you needed to establish your own voice in this country first before bringing that back. I think
a lot of it had to do with the singers, because I didn't grow up there long enough to establish a Russian style and my own voice within that. So I felt like I'd really just be mimicking, you know, the great Russian singers that I admired, and I wanted to sort of wait until maybe I had something of my own to say.
I think that's a fairly mature point of view for someone who was, you know, just barely in her teens, you know. When did you actually start writing songs?
I started writing some a cappella songs around the age of 16, but it took me a really long time to, I think I started writing some of my earliest, like, piano and voice songs, like, probably at late 17.
Mm, okay. And where did you learn to sing like that?
In the shower, mainly. Everyone was, like, I would always just be singing along, you know, because I had an amazing teacher here in the Bronx for classical piano, is Sonia Vargas, and I had this gift of, like, really proper education with piano, but with the singing, I just was always, like, humming around the house, and my family would make fun of me, and then one day someone was like, wait, that's not so bad.
Yeah,
and I was like, really?
Not bad at all. Regina Spektor is my guest on Soundcheck. She's going to sing another song for us in a moment, and we'll continue our conversation with her. And then Arturo O'Farrell waiting in the wings, the leader of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. So we have a busy afternoon ahead of us. This is Soundcheck.
WNYC's programming is supported by Zagat Survey, the publisher of restaurant and lifestyle guides to 90 cities worldwide, including guides to New York City shopping, gourmet marketplaces, theater, and nightlife, available in bookstores and at Zagat.com. BrainPop, producer of educational animated movies for children grades K-12, designed to enhance classroom learning and offer parents a safe, informative resource. The more you know, the more you know. Online at BrainPop.com.
Becoming a WNYC member is fast, it's easy, and it will have a profound effect on the quality of what you'll hear in the coming months. The general election is just around the corner, and NPR, the BBC, and WNYC's own news team will provide full coverage. That coverage comes at an extra cost, so every contribution is important. It helps WNYC continue our deep commitment to journalistic excellence. Please call 1-888-376-9692 or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thanks.
Now, we've been pretty low-key about the fact that it is a fall fundraiser on Soundcheck so far, but it is a fall fundraiser, and your participation in it is always important and, you know, never more so than during the hours of the day when we have a chance to explore some cultural news, as we do on Soundcheck. I mean, you know, obviously we're keeping you apprised of what's going on with the upcoming election and all of the issues attendant on that, but it's good to sort of remind ourselves occasionally of what makes this metropolitan area so great, and that's what we try to do each afternoon at 2 o'clock. So if you're not already a member of WNYC, try us out at the $50 level, and if it's time to renew, try a pledge of $120. If you like, you can chop that up into $10 payments each month of the year. We'll set you up with your credit card on a regular debit. Just call us at 1-888-376-9692 or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thanks. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and Regina Spektor is my first guest this afternoon. We've already heard her sing once for us here in our studio, and she'll be doing so again in a moment. Regina, you do a lot of your work unaccompanied, right? Just you and the piano?
Yeah, pretty much most of it.
Now, is that, you know, is that the way you like it? Have you done a lot of work with bands?
No, I haven't. I mean, I don't have very much experience with bands at all, but I'm really excited because I've just been very recently playing with a bass player and a cello player, and I love how it sounds. So I'm hoping to do more and record more with them.
So bass and cello and piano.
Yeah.
Almost looks like a kind of a chamber music thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until you start singing. Now, you were just out with the Strokes, opening for them.
Yeah, it was about a year ago.
Oh, was it that long
ago?
Yeah,
I didn't realize until I was thinking about it today, and I was like, wow, it's been a year.
And that was solo.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So now, I mean, what was that? I mean, you got one of the hottest rock bands, you know, headlining, and there you are, just you and the piano, and people are going, wow, what is this? Must have been a real... I must have been an experience.
Oh, it was an experience. It was definitely, it was incredible to be in those, like, places. And, you know, they were, like, my favorite rock band at the moment. I had just listened to their record nonstop for, like, 2 months, and then suddenly I was on tour with them. But it was also really hard because a lot of their fans are, you know, like... rock and roll.
Used to a certain kind of music, right?
Yeah, so they were just like, oh, here comes girl with piano, you know, let's heckle her. And I was like, oh, damn.
Well, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, no, I definitely learned to be a lot stronger on that tour. It's priceless.
Well, now, your last album is called Soviet Kitsch.
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of alluded to this a few minutes ago that, you know, only recently beginning to put a little bit of Russian into some of the songs. This is your third record.
Mm-hmm.
And is it explicitly referring to growing up in the last days of the Soviet Union?
I think that in a lot of ways, it's just when I came, there was sort of the... because there was a lot of propaganda on both sides, I think. And when I came, I got to meet a lot of the, you know, adults around me, American adults. And there was this understanding, oh, you're Russian, commie, vodka, you know, kind of a very...
To a nine-year-old girl?
Yeah, which was very surprising to me, you know. But in a lot of ways, since then, I understood why, you know, because a lot of these people grew up listening to... tremendous amounts of, you know, propaganda. And so it was sort of like, you know, my little salute to that, like, you know, if this is Soviet kitsch, then this is what Soviet kitsch sounds like, you know.
And you did have musicians helping you out on that record.
Yeah, I did. I had, like, all over the place. I have strings on there. Jane Scarpantoni played on, the first track, Ode to Divorce, and Graham Mabey, who's an amazing bass player, played on the record. And this punk band from England called Kill Canada. Like, I flew to London and I recorded, like, three of the tracks there. The Strings on Some Days and Us were recorded in London. And it was all over the place and it was really fun. Alan Bezozzi played drums on Carbon Monoxide. And it was my first very brief experience with studio musicians, and I learned a lot.
Well, now, one result of all of this is that, you know, you released these albums basically independently, and now you're signed to Sire Records.
Yeah, it's really exciting. They're wonderful.
And what are they, so they're reissuing Soviet Kitsch?
See, Soviet Kitsch never really, I mean, all I ever had it, sorry, I'm not used to speaking on the radio that well. The only way I could ever get Soviet Kitsch out to people was through CD Baby or through
online,
online or through my shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so not that many people have it, and now it's available digitally, and also it's available through my website. Sire helped me with that, and then they're gonna put it out with all this lyrics and additional artwork in February, so I'm really excited.
Great. Well, you want to do another song for us?
Yes, please.
What one?
I'll do another song off Soviet Kitsch called The Ghost of Corporate Future.
All right. Regina Spektor is the songwriter and making her way to our piano. Ghost of Corporate Future is from her most recent album called Soviet Kitsch, and here's Regina Spektor to play it for us live this afternoon on Soundcheck.
Walks out of his apartment. It is raining, he's got no umbrella. He starts running beneath the awnings.
trying to save his suit. Trying to save his suit. Trying to dry, but no good. When he gets to the crowded subway platform, he takes off both of his shoes. He steps right into somebody's fat loogie, and everyone who sees him says, ew. Everyone who sees him says, ew. But he doesn't care, cause last night he got a visit from the ghost of corporate future. The ghost said, take off both your shoes, whatever chances you get, especially when they're wet. He also said, imagine you go away on a business trip one day, and when you come back home, your children have grown and you never made your wife moan. Your children have grown and you never made your wife moan. And people make you nervous, you think the world is ending, and everybody's features have somehow started blending. And everything is plastic and everyone's sarcastic, and all your food is frozen, it needs to be defrosted. You think the world was ending, you think the world was ending, you think the world was ending right now. You think the world was ending, you think the world was ending, you think the world was ending right now. Well, maybe you should just drink a lot less coffee and never ever watch the 10 o'clock news. Maybe you should kiss someone nice or lick a rock or both. Maybe you should cut your own hair, cause that can be so funny. It doesn't cost any money and it always grows back. Hair grows even after you're dead. And people are just people, they shouldn't make you nervous. The world is everlasting, it's coming and it's going. If you don't toss your plastic, the streets won't be so plastic. And if you kiss somebody, then both of you'll get practice. The world is everlasting, put dirt balls in your pocket. Put dirt balls in your pocket and take off both your shoes. Cause people are just people, people are just people. People are just people like you. People are just people, people are just people, people are just people like you. The world is everlasting, is coming and is going. The world is everlasting, is coming and is going, is coming and is going.
That is Regina Spektor, live on Soundcheck, and The Ghost of Corporate Future. A version of that appears on her CD called Soviet Kitsch, but that's a live performance here in our WNYC studio. Regina is about to leave for Europe, a little tour of Europe.
Yeah, I'm playing in Paris November 7th, and then I'm going to play Manchester November 9th, and Glasgow November 13th, and in London November 15th.
All right. Well, Regina, let me just say that, number one, I approve of the Ramones sweatshirt that you're wearing.
Thanks.
And two, it has been great fun having you here in our studio this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun, too.
You can find Regina Spektor's CDs, including Soviet Kitsch, online at cdbaby.com and as of February
stores. Sorry. You can't find it on CD Baby, but on reginaspektor.com.
reginaspektor.com, Spektor with a K. And this is a little bit of the album Soviet Kitsch to wrap up this portion of Soundcheck, and Arturo O'Farrell joining us momentarily.
And it's harsher than yours, and colder than yours. They come in all quiet, sweep up, and then they leave. And you don't hear a single floorboard creak. They're so much stronger than the friends you try to keep by your side.
WNYC's programming is supported by Fox Searchlight Pictures presenting Sideways, a comedy from Alexander Payne, director of Election and About Schmidt, starring Paul Giamatti, about two friends on a bachelor send-off whose misadventures lead to discoveries about women, dreams, love, and reality. Universal Classics and Tower Records, presenting a new recording of Maurizio Pollini of Beethoven Sonatas, Opus 10 and Opus 13, now available at Tower Records and TowerRecords.com. WNYC's cultural arts partner, Second Stage Theater, presents Danny and the Deep Blue Sea by Academy Award winner John Patrick Shanley, directed by Lee Silverman. Tickets at 212-246-4422 or SecondStageTheater.com.
This is music from the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, Aljo for short, led by pianist and musical director Arturo O'Farrell, a frequent guest on Soundcheck here in our WNYC studios. And today, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra and Arturo and the whole gang are opening one of the three new halls at the so-called
The house, the house swing, of swing. Built.
First of all, Arturo, good to have you back here today.
It's always great. This is a great show. I've been a fan for years, and always really, really a special treat to be here.
Well, and especially today when you are opening specifically the Allen Room at the new digs for the jazz at Lincoln Center, the Rose Hall.
It's a huge honor on a lot of levels, but certainly one of them is that it's an incredibly beautiful room. For folks that haven't seen it or are going to see it soon, it's a very striking locale. And this is a room that has as its backdrop a sheer glass window overlooking Columbus Circle from about the seventh floor and the tops of the trees of Central Park. So it's a beautiful, beautiful hall. The first reports, too, by the way, are that acoustically it's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a walkthrough last week, and they've obviously been doing test concerts and stuff. You haven't been involved in any of those?
I haven't been involved in any of the test concerts, though I did attend a test concert in the Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola,
mm-hmm. the smaller room of the three spaces, which Bill Charlap is opening tonight.
My good friend.
Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra are opening the big room, which is
the Rose Hall.
The Allen Room is the one with the 50-foot-high, 90-foot-wide glass wall.
Everyone was very nervous about the acoustic effect of that window, and somehow the acousticians and Wynton and the people who designed this room did a marvelous job. They tilted the window at a specific angle, reinforced the sound buffering and sound absorption devices in the room, and from all preliminary reports, it sounds spectacular.
Yeah. The band, Aljo, is a big band, so, there is that potential for lots of boomy, boxy-sounding stuff happening there, so I guess they had to be very careful.
Well, therein lies the quandary, because the band, as you know, is a percussion-heavy band. And always, since the beginning of Latin jazz, Latin music, period, the struggle has been to create an ambiance where percussion isn't overwhelming and creates the impetus for other instruments within that ensemble to be loud. But I think we're working very diligently to create kind of the older school of Latin music, mambo music, in which the percussionists don't overplay.
Well, it's funny because Wynton last week was telling us that he thinks everybody just plays too loud.
We all do. We all go through that. I heard the interview, and as a matter of fact, I concur completely because one of the common statements during rehearsal is, why are we blowing so hard? And it always invariably comes down to the rhythm section throwing, daggers at the horn section, and the horn section throwing daggers right back, because since the beginning of time, I'm sure Duke Ellington dealt with this as well. They blame us, we blame them, and it's a happy family. It's dysfunctional. But it's a happy dysfunctionality.
And there you are at the piano, and you can only bang so hard at those keys.
This is true. We try very, very hard to perform our music acoustically. And as a matter of fact, we just had a great time in Shanghai and had a wonderful opportunity to play Afro-Latin jazz big band style in an acoustic setting without monitors and very little audience amplification. So I know it can be done, but the pianos will only go so loud.
Now, I know Brazilian music is huge and has been for decades in Japan. How is Afro-Latin jazz received in China?
I was incredibly elated because, to be honest with you, I was incredibly fearful. I had absolutely no idea how it would be received. I was scared that people would just sit there and passively. But by the end of the last concert, we had standing ovations and people screaming for more.
Do people there, I mean, do they know the tradition? Do they know your father, the great Chico O'Farrell? Are they cognizant of any of where you're coming from?
At one point, I'll tell you, it's funny, that I think they have, and I can't verify this historically, but one day I got a call from Fernando Trevas, the filmmaker who did Calle 54 and La Belle Epoque. He was filming a movie about a set in Shanghai, and one of the scenes required there to be a mambo orchestra. And he wanted to fly me over to, I guess it was at that point, Hong Kong, to oversee, to consult for the scene and to help direct the music using Chinese musicians. The interesting thing about that is he told me that there was a whole scene, apparently, in the 40s and 50s in which mambo music was a very big deal in China.
Well, Shanghai was, I mean, you know, Shanghai was a back door through which many European Jews got out of Europe.
I heard this. I was just talking about this. This was the only place that had an open border.
Yeah.
And so, of course, one of the first things I did when I went to Shanghai is look up the you know, the synagogue to see what if it was really true. Of course it's true.
Yeah. So it was a very cosmopolitan place in the 30s and 40s, film industry and all that kind of stuff. So I guess maybe, you know, makes some sense that, you know, mambo, which had swept through America and into Europe, got into China somehow that way.
It's a very fitting picture. I mean, in my mind, it's such a cosmopolitan city, and there's such a beauty to it. The idea of this sophisticated mambo scene with, you know, people dressed to the nines and doing their thing is very appropriate.
So we're speaking with Arturo O'Farrell. He's the pianist and musical director of ALJO, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra at Lincoln Center. So you were in Shanghai not too long ago, and now here you are at home, and for the first time tonight, playing in your new home.
It's a very exciting moment for us, and I'll tell you why. Two reasons. First of all, we're going to be able to play, and this was the entire zeitgeist, the spirit of the band, was to create not only a quote-unquote repertory orchestra, but to look to the future of this music, and half the program is going to be the masters, and half the program is going to be new commissions and works. And so it's very appropriate because the setting of the Rose Hall is both a place to celebrate the past and a view to the future. I'm sure Winton probably expounded on this quite
last week, yeah,
quite well. This is a forward-looking place. It's not a museum, mm-hmm. But it's a place where we can honor our heroes and our mentors. And so this is this evening for the ALJO, not only will it be a culmination of all the work that we put into it, but it'll be a forward-looking moment. We are, obviously, look, this is three concerts taking place in the only world's only facility dedicated to jazz, and one of the three representatives is going to be Latin jazz.
That's great.
I think it's a shining moment in history, and certainly in the history of our Latino people.
Well, we've been talking about mambo and how mambo was, you know, could be found in unexpected places. It's certainly not unexpected on this recording from ALJO. This isn't a commercially available recording that we're about to hear.
No, this is a recording that we've been offering to potential bookers and performing arts organizations throughout the world.
And this is called Mambo Inn.
Mambo Inn.
All right. My guest is Arturo O'Farrell. Let's hear him leading ALJO, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra at Lincoln Center. Mambo Inn, played by the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, based at Lincoln Center, opening the new Allen Room at the Frederick P. Rose Hall, which is the new home for Jazz at Lincoln Center and Aljo. Arturo O'Farrell is here. He will be rushing uptown immediately after leaving our studio because I'm sure you have a small S sound check to do up in the Allen Room.
We have several press conferences and interviews and sound checks, and at some point I'm going to put on a suit and tie.
Mm-hmm. Then Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra open the biggest of the three spaces. Bill Charlap is in the Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, the smallest of the three. You are in this remarkable Allen Hall with the huge glass wall overlooking Central Park, and playing with the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Now, we've alluded to your father, Chico O'Farrell, and to Mario Bausa, two of the real progenitors of the music that you and the orchestra play today.
I would say so. There's a very, you know, the history's always written about as being created in a specific time in a specific place. Obviously, things aren't that simple in black and white. A lot of things went into the creation of this genre, but certainly some of the most influential people were Mario Bausa, Chico O'Farrell, Machito, Tito Puente. But one of the things that's interesting, and this I can't help noticing, is that a great deal of this took place because of the physical proximity of the clubs on 52nd Street.
You mean to jazz clubs?
To jazz clubs. Yeah. In other words, the Palladium was down the street from the Birdland was down the street from Roseland, Roseland was down the street from the Fire Spot. You know, these places were all in a close, within blocks of each other. So musicians, and this is a great allegory for what's happening today, because musicians from the gigs, the dance gigs, the mambo gigs, would get off their job and go visit the jazz clubs, and the jazz musicians would get off their gig and go visit the dance clubs. And this is how a lot of the cross-pollination took place, and this is incredible. I mean, you don't hear a lot of historians talk about this, but in some ways, with the creation of this new performance facility, of the potential for that cross-pollination exists. Again, imagine that you're sitting in the concert hearing Hermeto Pascual in one room, and in the next room, the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Orchestra, the jazz orchestra as it's called now, is performing. And in the Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, you got Gonzalo Rubalcaba or something like that. And you got these like three incredibly disparate influences
representing North America, Cuba, and Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of a sudden, these guys get out of their jobs, their gigs, they're playing after all for a living, and they go, gee, well, what are we going to do?
Well, Wynton was saying, I guess you heard in our interview with him, he was talking about the hang set.
Yeah.
Later on at the Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, when everyone's done and they just want to hang out and play, and just, you know, like in the old days, we just play for fun.
In the best of all possible worlds, that is exactly what will take place. But even just for people exchanging phone numbers, it seems like a ridiculous setting.
Well, you know, I mean, when you think of Afro-Latin jazz, you think of Machito, but as soon as you say the name Machito, you got to think Dizzy Gillespie.
Absolutely.
You know, the two of them got together and created one of the great hits.
Dizzy Gillespie was actually in the Cab Calloway band with Mario Bausa.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking and they got to be friends. And at one point, Dizzy said, I'm looking for a good percussionist. And Mario suggested Chano Pozo. And that was really the nexus, because Chano and Dizzy started really hanging together. And as a matter of fact, Dizzy was fond of saying that he didn't speak Spanish, Chano didn't speak English, but they both spoke African.
Ah.
So that they're you know, that's how they got together and created, and of course all the corollary relationships that took place because of that.
Yeah, all of this happening, you know, about half a century or more ago now, Afro-Latin jazz has become its own very distinctive tradition, and now its own distinct part of the empire of jazz at Lincoln Center.
The empire. It is. I don't a lot of people will laugh at that, but it's not that it's an empire, it's a center.
Yeah.
There's many empires of jazz. And in fact, one of the great things about what Wynton has done is that he's recognized the universality of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
The incredible contributions of European jazz musicians, of people like Hermeto Pascual, who's been mentioned several times, and he's a very interesting human being who will be performing both with the LCJO, which is the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, and later on next year with the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra.
Oh, great. And he's performing later this month in the Allen Room with his own band.
Yes, absolutely.
On October 29th and 30th. But the official opening of the Allen Room and all the rest of the three spaces at the Frederick P. Rose Hall at Columbus Circle, that opening is tonight, and the Allen Room will be opened by Aljo, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, led by my guest, Arturo O'Farrell. And although Afro-Latin jazz, as you were saying, is very much a product of what was happening in New York because of the proximity of jazz and Latin music clubs, certainly a strong Cuban accent runs through the whole thing.
I think, well, there is a tendency for places to be centered, just as jazz was centered in its birth in the New Orleans, even though the influences came from all over Africa and Europe.
Right.
A very similar event took place in Cuba at the turn of the century, strangely enough, in the same time period, more or less, in which influences were coming from Europe and Africa, but it took on a different flavor because it's a different cultural milieu. And I think that it's been a conduit, much as Sao Paulo has, or Rio de Janeiro has been a conduit through which a lot of the influences were gathered and mm-hmm. disseminated. And I think, consequently, a lot of times when people think of, the average person thinks of Latin music, they think of salsa.
Right.
And salsa really has... Another New York phenomena. Yeah. But now, Mario Basar was proud of saying there is such a thing as salsa, which I don't agree with. But the idea is that a lot of this music, and I explain this a lot when I teach, a lot of the music that we call Latin, whether it's bachata or charango, it all comes from a very specific form of music called Cuban son, which comes from the Santiago region, the Oriente province of Cuba.
Once again is Aljo, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, led by pianist and musical director Arturo O'Farrell, always a welcome guest in our soundcheck studios. He'll be up at the Allen Room, the middle-sized hall at the new Frederick P. Rose Hall, tonight to open the space with the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Will there be dancing taking place, do you think?
Yes, there will be. As a matter of fact, we've encouraged dancing. Well, not necessarily in the audience because they'll be setting up seats and stuff. But we have enlisted the services of four very fine dancers who will be to the side of the orchestra on either side, left and right, facing the audience, doing tremendous dance steps, tremendous original mambo dance steps. So it's going to be visually, which is interesting because it will be televised as well.
Right.
It'll be part of a live from Lincoln Center televised setting, so that it should be visually arresting as much as orally.
So just in case you didn't have enough to look at, with you and this full band of guys wailing away in front of a 50 by 90 foot plate glass wall that overlooks Central Park, you're going to have some dancers for people to look at, too, just in case they get bored.
Absolutely. But we also do it because, and I know Wynton feels about this the same way about this. This music, a lot of the music we call jazz, a lot of the music we call Latin, has its roots in dance. Yeah. And that's super important for us because it's part of the intellectual legacy, actually, of this music.
Now, so you're opening this Allen space. It's uptown. It's a Columbus Circle, part of jazz at Lincoln Center. Do you still be playing the downtown clubs?
Absolutely. I'll be playing a lot of the downtown clubs. I continue to. As a matter of fact, I have a brand new band called Risa Negra, which is a great, great new project of mine. It's got Paquito de Rivera, Tom Harrell, Daphne Spieto, and we'll be performing in Birdland the second week of December. Mm-hmm. And I continue my weekly 7 years we're going to be celebrating with the Chico Farrell Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra in Birdland mid-November.
Wow.
And I have a monthly series at the Cornelia Street Cafe.
Which is way downtown.
Which is way downtown.
Yeah.
And I look forward to playing all over New York. The presence of the Frederick P. Rose Hall is not going to damage that. And in fact, I think it'll encourage the music scene in general.
Well, it all begins tonight. The three spaces are officially opening with Bill Charlap at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, with Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra in the big space, the Rose Hall.
Absolutely.
And in the Allen Room, it's Aljo, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, with my guest Arturo O'Farrell. Arturo, I'm delighted that you were able to make time for us this afternoon. Good luck tonight. Have fun. I'll see you there.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and as it turns out, Tony Bennett will be Bill Charlap's guest in the Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola opening tonight. Both I and Anthony DeCurtis will be attending the opening tonight. Tomorrow on Soundcheck, we'll report back to you on how it looks and how it sounds. And also on the program tomorrow, Sam Phillips, the one-time Christian rocker, has reinvented herself yet again. Her newest album, A Boot and a Shoe, continues in her mission to seduce and disturb. Sam Phillips tomorrow on Soundcheck. Coming up next, it's Fresh Air with filmmaker Michael Moore on the response to his controversial film Fahrenheit 9/11. Join him and Terry Gross next at 3 o'clock. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our engineer today was Rob Christensen. Our program is produced by Allison Lichter, Brian Wise, and Sarah Lilly. Elena Park is our executive producer. I'm John Schaefer. Tune in tomorrow for Soundcheck here at 93.9 WNYC and check us out online for a video slideshow of our tour of the new Frederick P. Rose Hall at WNYC.org.